I just want to encourage anybody that's listening, like, your relationships with people in ministry, you have no idea what God has in them for you. I just can't encourage you enough that people that you get to serve Jesus with and or that you just, God connects with you. Man, pray into those relationships because God doesn't, they're not for nothing. They're a big deal.
Yeah.
Welcome to the CGN Mission and Methods Podcast, Season 4. My name is Nick Cady. I'm the pastor of Whitefields Community Church in Longmont, Colorado, and I will be your host this season. The goal and vision of this podcast is that it would be a forum for communication about Calvary Global Network. We want to share with you some of the stories about what God is doing. We want to talk about some of the initiatives we're involved in spearheading, and we want to answer the questions you might have about who we are as a network. On the episodes in this season, I'm joined by Pastor Brian Broderson, the founder and president of CGN and the pastor of Calvary Chapel in Costa Mesa, California. For season 4 of the podcast, Brian and I will be interviewing the members of the CGN executive team so you can get to know their stories, hear about their ministries and the roles they play in CGN, and find out what they're excited about for the future. In this episode, we speak with Richard Cimino. Richard has been a pastor for over 40 years, the majority of which was spent in Northern California. In this discussion, we talk about the importance of cultivating friendships in ministry. Richard shares very candidly about some of his hardest experiences as a pastor, including closing down a church, and how it was his friendships with other pastors and leaders which God used to encourage him and give him direction in those times. Here's the episode. Welcome to CGM Mission and Methods Podcast. My name is Nick Cady. I'm joined today by Pastor Brian Broderson and Pastor Richard Cimino. Hey, Richard.
Hey, how you doing, Nick?
Doing great. Good to be with you.
Great to be here.
Well, this season on the Mission and Methods Podcast, we're not talking as much about the initiatives that CGN's doing, that we're doing a lot. We talked a lot about that last season. We really recommend any of our listeners who are curious, you know, about the origins, kind of the doctrinal perspectives of CGN, as well as maybe answering some questions that people have had. This season's much more, we want to introduce people to our executive team so they can get to know and maybe get a feel for the vision, the passions of the men who have been called to lead in this season of Calvary Global Network. And so, Richard, I know that you're a big part of that. And so please just introduce yourself to our listeners. Tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, where you serve, what's been your journey up to this point?
Well, I am married to my best friend, Valerie, and we were married in 1977, and we have four adult children, two grandkids, and just had an amazing Christmas with all of them. And so just coming out of that season, so thankful for just our life as a family. And my life in ministry began when we were fairly newlyweds. And I was asked by Pastor Chuck Smith to come on staff here about 1981, if I'm not mistaken. And it was an awesome opportunity. I actually really never dreamed that I would be in ministry. I was raised Catholic, went to Catholic grade school, Catholic high school, just bailed on church completely at the age of 18. But a guy that I'd gone to Catholic grade school and Catholic high school actually led me to Jesus when I was 22. And by way of stepping into a Catholic church setting, I had never been to a Protestant church and went back to a Catholic church, and there was this handful of young adults that looked like the same thing must have happened to them that happened to me. And so I got to know some of them, and they invited me here because they had come to Christ because a Catholic priest had invited some of these hippies from Calvary Chapel to come and speak at a youth retreat, a Catholic youth retreat.
Wow.
And a bunch of them got saved, one of whom was my wife. So we ended up coming. My first time here was on a Saturday night concert, and I still can't find words to describe the atmosphere. Was so thick with the presence of the Lord. It was just mind-blowing. And I just was like, I need to hear more of this. And then somebody introduced me to Thursday nights with Pastor Chuck. And by the time things got going, we were coming on Monday nights to the Monday night concerts, to Tuesday School of the Bible, to Thursday was Pastor Chuck's midweek study at the time. And then we would come on Saturday night concerts and then go back to the Catholic Church for 5:15 Mass. And then there was a charismatic prayer meeting afterwards. And myself and a handful of these young adults, we were a part of that. And somebody once said, hey, does anybody have anything they want to share? And I had my little yellow notepad from Sunday morning's Bible study with Chuck, and I just had taken copious notes. And I just took out my notes and went through my notes with them. And that was the first time I really ever taught, was that. And about every week, somebody would be saying, hey, you got anything you want to share? And I just keep coming back. And what I'd heard that Sunday morning, I would be giving out. And the Lord began to add to that group. And at one point, the head priest at the church decided he needed to have a sit-down talk with all of us young people because we were talking too much about the blood of Jesus and being saved. And he said, no one knows what it means to be saved. The greatest Catholic theologians don't know what it means to be saved. And I'm still this like little baby Christian guy. And I looked at this guy next to me and I said, is this what that blind leading the blind thing is all about?
Oh, man.
And so anyway, when it was time for us to get married, we were going to be married at the Catholic Church. And nothing seemed to be going well with that because we were told that we were apostates and we couldn't do anything there. And so we sent out all the invitations and didn't know what to do. And so I thought, I'll just call Calvary Chapel. So I call Calvary Chapel and the secretary puts me, she goes, hold on, I'll give you a pastor. And I'm on hold briefly. And then some guy gets on the phone, he goes, this is Romaine. And that's my first meeting with Pastor Romaine. And I told him what was happening. He goes, well, what's the Lord telling you to do? And I said, I don't know. He goes, well, what do you do when you don't know? And I'm thinking, is this like a trick question? I don't know. And I said, nothing. And he goes, duh. And I'm going, who is this guy? I never met him. Who is this? And so anyway, so this is my first pastoral introduction. So anyway, he says, you go pray with that young lady and let the Lord take care of this matter. And so I get off the phone and I go and tell the guys that where we were hanging out at their house, where I go, this has just happened. And we all prayed and I went home. And the guy, the priest at the Catholic Church who had invited all these hippies from Calvary to come and share, he called me and said, we're going to figure this thing out for you. And it turns out that were going to ordain their first run out of deacons in the Orange County Diocese. And there was this really godly guy that was at this Catholic Charismatic Prayer Group that was going to be one of those deacons. And he said, so John will marry you, guy. I won't. He'll marry you. And so there you have it. But that was the last thing we ever did at the Catholic Church. And we just knew we were called to ministry. And a few years later, asked me to be the high school pastor, and which is another whole story in itself, huh, Brian?
Yes. It's just...
I love just the whole story of the Catholic, the context there, you know, and just that season that you guys had where God, you know, God was moving in that church. And but then there, you know, there was a point where the door shut and the Lord led you over here. And, you know, for our listeners, just Richard and I, we've been close friends about, you know, 42 years or so now. So, and we were in ministry together here back in the early 1980s and have pretty much been, although separated sometimes even by an ocean,
yeah,
we've been partnered in ministry for all these years, and which has been great. And now, you know, here Rich has come full circle in a sense, you know, coming back to where everything
40
started.
Years later.
40 years later, that's crazy. And joined our staff here at Costa Mesa. It's such a blessing to have him with us. And Richard, you know, so that was the story of kind of how you ended up here. But then after some years here of leading the high school ministry, it was your primary ministry, the Lord sent you up to Northern California. You were the reluctant prophet that went. I remember the first conversation you and I had about it. And I was already gone at that time. I had left some years ago to move down to North San Diego County and pastor down there. But you looked at me and you said, is Chuck mad at me? Does Chuck not like me? Why is he doing this to me? You know, Chuck was inviting you to leave, not because he didn't like you, but because he thought that you would do a good job up there. But you went up to Grass Valley, California.
Yeah.
And just, you know, walk us through kind of just a quick, you know, Grass Valley, which then turned into Roseville. Tell us about that.
Yes. Well, Grass Valley was definitely culture shock on every level. And I'd never met a redneck in my life until I moved to Grass Valley. And they were wearing flannel shirts and cowboy boots and buck knives on their Levi's, and
they were the precursor to the hipsters.
Yes, they were. And it was also kind of a time warp because, Grass Valley was a town of about 10,000 at the time, and there were people that were there simply to not be here mm-hmm. or places like here, and they just wanted time to stop. And the church was really chaotic at the time. I was the third pastor there. The first guy left under some dubious circumstances, and the guy who I replaced had a total nervous breakdown and had some real marital things happening. And so I kind of knew the general picture. And honestly, if I'd known the full picture, I probably would have said no. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the Lord's doing for us to not know it. But the first couple of years were really rough. They didn't like me. And I don't know if anybody else has had this kind of experience, but several people came into my office and that said things to the effect, this is my church and I don't want it to change. And we don't want this to become like a Los Angeles mega church. We don't want to see one more person in this church than is here right now.
Wow.
And I mean, you go from where we were, where we couldn't keep up with what the Lord was doing. And there was vision for people were hoping for more fruit. And here are people who, we just want to be set up here on Alta Street, this little back street in a little back street town that kind of came into being during the Gold Rush days. But the things that we'd learned here, I remember sitting on a porch at one point where Valerie and I had a conversation, and Valerie looked at me and says, is it too late for you to go to law school? Because mm-hmm. we were persona non grata there. We weren't recognized. They didn't want us there. And I was sitting on our front porch one day on my day off, and I felt the Lord say to me really clearly, I gave you 8 years at Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa. You're not leaving. You just do what you learned there. And that was kind of like it. It was like, hey, there isn't any exit plan here. We're going to be here. And we ended up being there 13 years. And by the time about the last year and a half is when we began to think about, well, we're going to start a Bible study in Roseville. But up to that time, the women's ministry had gone from 8-10 ladies that were really, really struggling to 300 ladies that were flourishing, and there's leadership being developed within the women's ministry, and the men's ministry had a couple hundred men regularly there in attendance. And just on all grounds, we were starting to really move and being a very healthy church in within the community and missionally as well, outside of our locality. And about, about 11 and a half years into it, the Lord had really put on my heart to start a Bible study in the city of Roseville. Now, Roseville is about a half hour downhill from where we were. And every time Valerie and I would go on our day off into that, we'd go to the movies there and go eat there. And we would go, man, there needs to be a Calvary Chapel here. It's just it was like Irvine in the 1980s, like Irvine here in Orange County in the 1980s, just growing. But there was starting to be some bigger churches there, but they were kind of more like in the seeker, philosophy. And so big congregations, little Bible. And we just felt like God wanted us to go there and just teach the Bible. So we actually sold our house, bought a house there. And we're still pastoring at Grass Valley, but we started a Monday night Bible study in our house. And that grew from about a dozen to about 70. And then the city said, you can't meet like that anymore. And we moved into a community center. And at that point is when we started running into some problems with the kind of the then CCOF thing. And it's like, you can't start a church here because there was another Calvary here. And, the church is all, the city was, by then was 100,000 people. And it got really weird, to say the least. And so I was told that I couldn't start a church there. And if I did do a church in that area, that I couldn't be on the list. And if I wasn't on the list in Roseville, then Grass Valley would be taken off the list as well, which caused problems at Grass Valley, which was very pro starting this kind of campus, if you would. And so that's another story for another time.
It's quite a story. Yes.
And yeah, I don't know if you got any memories of that, Brian, but.
Well, I do. And going back though, something triggered when you said that group of people that came into your office and, complained about the fact that you were trying to make the church grow or whatever you were doing. It triggered, I remember that same exact conversation that some people in the church in Vista had with me. They were so mad at me because I'd wrecked their thing. You know, yeah. They said, you know, we had a nice little thing going here. We really loved it. We don't want, they literally said, we don't want these new people coming to the church. And I was like, well, nice. You got to take it up with God. I'm not bringing these people that, you know, the Lord's sending them here. So yeah, what a, you know, the mentality of some, but yeah, that was, we'll probably, we probably could do a whole podcast on that other situation. Back, it was a very unpleasant season for you, obviously, very much so, in your family, and yeah, it was not a good time. But the Lord redeemed it in the end, and
yes, He did.
Yeah. So
the Monday night study, we had actually plotted a course when I was still at Grass Valley that, you know, within a year we would start a Sunday service, and we got a whole team of people that would come from Grass Valley. And they would man and staff that service until the people in the local physical community that would start to come to the Lord or attend church there, then they would begin to take it over. And then we would be out there on our own. And but that happened much more suddenly than we thought it was going to happen in terms of just the ties being cut. But the Lord was faithful. And we did start our first Sunday service on January 4th, 2004. And it was the same Sunday that I had to like literally resign from. Mm. So two services in Grass Valley, I resigned before the congregation. And then after second service, got in a car, drove 30 minutes, walked into the service that had already started and had finished its worship time. And I walked in and I said, let's open up our Bibles to Acts chapter 1. Wow. And that was a very strange day, kind of surreal in a lot of ways. It's so exciting in a lot of ways. But then Monday, the reality kind of hit like, wow, then we are now no longer there. We're only just here. But like Brian was saying, the Lord redeemed it, and it was really, really wonderful. And we were there for, if you count the Monday night Bible studies starting in our home, almost 20 years there. So, and it was really a tremendous time. And God did some amazing things there. And one of which was we began to see Metro become involved outside of the country in missions, especially Brazil. We had some great relationships that spawned ministry, and part of it was ministry in England, and so thankful. For years, Brian, you would call me like every summer going, you want to go to Creation mm-hmm. Fest? You want to go to Creation Fest? And I was like, not this year. We just can't, the church can't afford it, but in time. And boy, when we finally did get to go, what we saw there was so mind-blowing. It was like, this is everything we'd ever dreamed of in all the years that I'd been doing ministry in England. Like, I just saw it, well, this is it.
Yeah, and, you know, we've talked about Creation Fest in another previous episode as well. Maybe could Brian, you tell us, just give our listeners a view if they don't know what that is.
Right, yeah. Yeah, in our episode with Joel Turner, we talked about it. Yeah, so Creation Fest is a festival, a music festival, and a Bible week. That's how we would describe it in the UK. It takes place in Cornwall, England. It was birthed out of my time in living in London. And in 2002, I had moved back to California in 2000. In 2002, a friend of mine and I, Phil Pachonis, who's since gone to be with Jesus, I had always shared with him about this vision I had to do a festival. And he was living in a place called North Devon at the time, and it was a surf community. And I kind of started a little group of guys down there that he ended up pastoring a church there. Anyway, he just randomly said to me one day, he said, hey, remember that festival thing that you're always talking about? Why don't we do it? Why don't we do it here in Devon? And it never really crossed my mind to do it there. I was always thinking London because that's where I had lived. And it just sort of resonated with me like, wow, yeah, maybe we could. So anyway, we did. And we started that festival in 2002. That was our first event with, you know, I don't know, maybe a couple hundred people wandered in throughout the day. A couple of days we set up, and it was really just an open, you know, inviting whoever was passing by, really, hey, come and check out some music and listen to some lectures on biblical subjects and things like that. Well, now here we are, you know, 20 plus years later, that festival has grown into something pretty substantial. and relocated from North Devon to Cornwall about 10 or 11 years ago. And so it is recognized now, you know, as the festivals are a big thing in the UK. Christian festivals are a big thing. But we're kind of right there on the list with everybody else. You know, this is an event that, hey, you're looking for something like this. Well, check Creation Fest out. So Richard was involved in ministry in the UK before I was. And he would go with Malcolm Wilde, who used to be here on staff. Richard and Malcolm were in a band together. And Malcolm, of course, came from England. So he would take teams, and Richard was part of that. And they would always tell me about, you know, all the great stuff God was doing in England. And at the time, I was, you know, England just wasn't on my radar. I was doing other stuff. And I remember one time you guys, I think, told me, you know, you should think about coming with us. And I remember really thinking about it and even praying about it. And it just felt like, no, I don't think that I'm supposed to do it. I didn't even know at the time later that I would, you know, be as involved as I have been. So when I you know, just remembering that and Rich and I having our long-term friendship, when I went to London, Richard was a part of that as well. In our first kind of scouting trip, we were together.
Yep.
And Ray Bentley and you and me, and there we were. And
with our daughters.
We had our daughters with us, yeah. And that was literally the moment where I sensed the Lord saying, you know, do something here in England. And so all the way along, you know, Richard was kind of there and part of that. So anyway, then all these years transpire and Creation Fest becomes this thing. And I always wanted Richard to come and experience something that I saw as, in a sense, kind of a fruit of the stuff that he'd invested earlier. And I wanted him to share in that fruit. You know, I wanted him to taste it and say, like, look, this is what the Lord has done with all of that. So that was kind of.
And when I got there the first time, and it was in Cornwall, like, I felt like it, I was a kid walking through the gates of Disneyland for the first time. Yeah. It was so mind blowing. And, you know, even as we're talking, I just want to encourage anybody that's listening, like, your relationships with people in ministry, you have no idea what God has in them for you. You know, from when I met you when I was working at the chapel store.
Yes.
Before I came on staff.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys were coming in, you'd be buying all your commentaries, and I'd just be coveting your job and your books and all that stuff. And it was just like, I would have never known at the beginning. And then when I first came on staff and you were still here as the junior high guy.
Yeah.
I would have never dreamed that we would have this lifelong friendship that would become so rich in ministry.
Yeah.
And I just can't encourage you enough that people that you get to serve Jesus with and or that you just, God connects with you. Man, pray into those relationships because God doesn't, they're not for nothing. Mm. They're big deals.
Yeah.
That's really good. You know, I'm always kind of going back to this question of like, why do we need a network? What's the point? And because I get people who contact me and they just be like, you know what? I'm fine. We're just doing our thing here in our town. We're plenty busy with our church and we don't need to invest in, you know, a network of churches. Like, what's the point? And I think there are several really good answers to that, like what we're doing as CGN. And we've talked about some of that stuff. But I think this is a really great point you're making here is that those friendships you have, God uses them. God uses those relationships in ways that you may not even realize it at first. You know, if Paul and Barnabas aren't hanging out in that prayer meeting in Antioch, right? Like, does the Spirit speak through one of the people and say, hey, set aside for me these men to go and do this mission? So I think that's really good. Were you going to say something about that, Brian?
Yeah, I do. I agree with you, Nick. I think that it's a mistaken idea to think that you can just sort of go about your business independently, just to be like, well, hey, we've got our church and this is we're connected with this. We don't need anything outside. That's a very limited perspective on what the church is. You know, the church is much bigger than your local congregation. And obviously you're not going to resonate with everybody that's out there. You're not going to be able to link arms with everyone and necessarily march to the same beat. But there are people that you will be able to. And that's why a bunch of different networks exist, because certain people resonate with this group and other people. You know, I was talking to a young kid yesterday who's looking at church plant and, you know, he's telling me about, you know, five different similar kinds of networks that he's already had some experience with. And each one of them had, you know, positive aspects to it. And then from his own personal preferences and things, there were some negatives. And then, so we started talking about CGN and, you know, maybe this would be a fit for him. But I just think that, and I think Richard, you and I both probably would agree on this, that the older we get, the more we value the friendships. I mean, maybe when we were younger and independent and doing our thing, you know, they were important, but they weren't as important. There'll come a time in your life where they will be, they will be the thing that really matters, you know, absolutely. And I think that's where we're at these days. So, you know, don't wait till you're in your 50s or 60s to build these relationships, man, you know, to build them early.
Well, I just know this, when I was like persona non grata in terms of the CCOF list of guys,
yeah,
that was not reality relationally for me. You know, like when I would just want to go to conferences, but I wasn't on the mailing list anymore.
Yeah.
Like Brian would literally sneak me in. It'd be like I'd be climbing over the fence, so to speak. And he would give me the golden ephod, you know, the name tag or whatever. But going through everything I went through during that time, that strange time of like, wait, what's happening here? I just want to go plant a church. And I had guys that I could pick up the phone and talk to them about it, even though there was no formal association. It wasn't like, you know, I got to actually go sit next to them in a conference or whatever. But those relationships, and they are more valuable the older you get. I thought, well, surely that's the low point of my Christian life. I will never experience anything as difficult and as traumatic as that again. And then we did on the heels of 2020. And more than ever, those friendships were like, literally like, you know, what's the picture of the hand over the cliff holding on to a guy that was like, I'm not losing my faith, I'm just losing my grip. Wow. You know, they were there. And then when you're at a pivotal point in your, you know, what's the art of your ministry going forward? Like you have somebody there going, oh, I think we're connected in this arc. Mm-hmm. I think we're seeing like where this might head. I am so thankful for those relationships. Mm-hmm. I'm so thankful for this relationship. I mean, I would have never met you if it weren't for CGN.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's right. We had you come out. It was awesome. We hung out, ate Peruvian food. You spoke at a men's event, a pastor's event. That was really cool. And I was just going to say, like, for me, I think someone was asking me this a while back, maybe a couple months ago, asking me, you know, what have been some of the biggest blessings? What have been some of the biggest struggles? And I had shared about the struggles, but one of the things I said was the biggest blessing was some of the friendships I've developed with other pastors in CGN that when I was facing a hard time, that was just, it was a breath of fresh air. It was like spring water, you know, to be able to reach out to these guys and have some counsel. And yeah, I just think it's so valuable.
You know, one thing, and this is not the time to do it because we don't have the time, but I think, Richard, one thing that's so, I think would be so valuable and helpful for listeners, for guys in ministry, you know, you did kind of, in a sense, the unthinkable in the sense that, you know, we would never necessarily think that the Lord would have you shut down your church, you know, just literally say, next week will be our last Sunday. But you did. And you did it not because, not out of desperation or not out of frustration even. You did it because you really sensed that's what the Lord was saying to do. You know, so backing up, like you said, with Metro, basically a 20-year history, and there comes a point where it's seeming like, you know, something radically different is happening through the pandemic and all of that. You know, you were at one time, I think, maybe a church of, you know, what, 1,200? And then, you know, you ended up being a church of 50, 60, 70 people.
Yeah.
And what do you do with that? And you know, I think people even probably just out of guilt would never want to think that I closed the doors on a church. But, you know, I 100% bear witness that God actually led you to do that. And again, this is a conversation that we'd have a long conversation about this for listeners. But, you know, just, and I'm sorry for saying, you know, in a nutshell, what would you say to encourage people from that? But I'm doing it anyway. In a nutshell, what would you say?
Yeah. Well, you know, again, it is another whole conversation. There's so much to be said about it. And, you know, there's definitely the grace of God in all of it was, it did superabound in ways that, like, I just really, when you just think, like, I don't know even how to stand up, you know, during all this. But again, relationally, there were just so many kind, encouraging, affirming, you know, words that were spoken to me by way of guys in CG. And in fact, and again, I just keeping along that line, it connects to this, is like, I would have never met Aaron Campbell and Ray Dash had it not been for the pastoral gatherings, prayer gatherings that Brian put together. And those guys were very, very much present in my struggle. And they live on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. And they would encourage me through the stuff that was going on. And you know, when things got to the point where we went, I think Grass Valley was about 1,200, 1,500 at one point, Brian, but Metro was probably 700 at its peak. And we did get down to like 70, 80 people. And I just knew one thing, like, I can't, when that was like what was left standing, it was like, I can't walk away from this. This is, you know, I have to care for these people. Well, at the CGN conference, was it last summer, Brian, the last CGN pastors, the leaders conference that you set up a lunch with
yeah, Valerie, with Ray.
With Ray Ortlund, yeah. Right? And Ray was so amazing, you know, in that conversation. And he looked at me and he said, so do you still feel called to pastor these people? And I said, obviously I feel, yes, I love these people and I can't walk away from these people until the Lord asked me to walk away from these people. But my wife had said to me not too long before that the Lord had really been speaking to her about, like, our time is coming to a close. And I'm thinking, yeah, in a couple of years, when we walk with these 70, 80 people, when we get them out and they're just totally, they are not just, you know, walking out of a foxhole in World War I, you know, and they're actually like up and walking upright and strong and healthy. And, but Ray's question to me began to stir that up, like, what really is going on here? And within a very short period of time, it was like the Lord really made it clear to me, like, no, you are done. And we had been a year as a mobile church meeting in a local high school, and these people were actually, they looked nothing like they did the first Sunday at the high school after having to leave our permanent place. Their tone, just the tone of our meetings was different, and you could see it in their faces, and you could see the way community groups were starting to gel. And it was like, wow, Lord, these people are actually okay. And it was at that time that I engaged in a conversation with Brian about, like, well, where are we going? You know, for Brian and I, we've had a number of conversations about, so what do you think we're going to be like? What are we going to do when we're old? Mm-hmm. You know, and I said, Brian, we are old now. What do we do? And I said, and you know, Brian, nothing would make us happier than to finish our time of ministry here at Costa Mesa. And I said, I'd love to talk to you about that. And if you don't feel that's right, I still want to talk to you because I just value your wisdom. And so he said, hey, I got to go up to the Twin Peaks to look at the progress on the Bible College construction. Why don't you drive up with me and let's talk. And I was thinking that morning, I go, this could be a bad drive home. It possibly, you know, it could be a very awkward one. But it was such an amazing conversation. And the Lord really, you know, by the time we were done with that conversation, it was like, yeah, this is what I'm doing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And gave you just a real sense of, all right, you know, this is the Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that brings us up to now, where you are on staff here at Calvary Costa Mesa. We're recording in the K-Wave studio, which is owned by the church. And so you're on staff. What's your role here?
Well, I'm a part of the teaching team here. And coming up, I'm really excited about this. On Wednesdays, they've just this last year, they started a new thing called The Gathering, in which they're offering classes, and the congregation can sign up for classes, and there's various topics or books of the Bible that are being taught. And I'm so excited because I get to teach on the Beatitudes. I also teach at the School of Worship with, I co-teach with John Huang, and I'm just here. I know Brian said to me, he says, man, I'd love for you to just be, to be listening ears for some of the younger guys. And
I think sometime, again, a future episode, we, you know, specifically with church planning, Richard did something that I'm always, you know, proud of him for, and I kind of marvel that he did it. But I think you were 52 when you stepped out and planted Metro. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a challenging thing at that stage in life. I mean, a lot of guys at 52, that's the last thing they would ever think about doing is starting from scratch.
Zero, yeah. Yeah.
So that's a, that we'll obviously save that for another
Well,
time.
Yeah. And I mean, having planted a church, I know this, you know, having, when we planted a church and then you see it come together, you're like, well, this is like a miracle that this happened, you know, like so many pieces where you've got these stories of things that God did and you're like, well, I can't, I remember having this thought before. I don't think I could replicate that. Like I can't,
no, you can't,
you can't like force the miracle to happen. You can, and it is almost like it requires a move of God every time
yeah.
something like that happens.
Totally.
I think that takes a ton of courage to be able to walk away from a sure thing to say, hey, God's leading me and I'm going to follow.
Yeah. Yeah. That was definitely the sense of it. It's like really by the time when I was starting to think about planting Metro, I can tell you like the last thing that got buttoned up was the whole administrative end of things. And it was like everything was just working. Mm. And it was like, I just get to teach the Bible. Mm. And then when the Lord put that in my heart, it's like, oh. And this might seem like a very kind of weird place to go right now, but it does tie in with how this thing ended was, you know, right around the conversation time with Brian about the, you know, the trajectory of for Valerie and I, we had an opportunity to spend an evening with Britt and Kate Merrick. And I was just sharing with him a little bit about that conversation and just, you know, he'd heard some of this, what had happened at Metro. And I told him, you know, I think we're supposed to leave it. I think we're just supposed to end it. We're just supposed to, like, we're going to end. And he just looked at me and he had this just matter-of-fact thing. He goes, you know, Richard, there's nothing in our broken world that doesn't die. He goes, every church has an end. He goes, there's no church from the book of Acts that's living. There's not been this continuous existence of certain church. And it was like, and, you know, he goes, and death isn't pretty. Some people die of cancer. And here's a guy whose daughter died of cancer at the age of 7. So when he said that, like, sometimes death is messy. I'm just going, oh. He goes, but why do we think that because we start a church, it's never going to end?
Mm-hmm.
And then Nate Holdridge said the same thing. When I was sharing with him what Britt said, he said, Richard, he goes, I've been wrestling with this for a couple of years. Like, why do we think in the especially in America that so much goes into planting the church that we just think they're going to go on forever and forever. There's nothing in the New Testament that shows us that. So I think like when you're talking about like, it's one thing to see at birth and you think that's him. It's like looking at your child, like what a miracle. Mm-hmm. And you're never thinking they're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're thinking I'll never see that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go to heaven before they go to heaven.
Yeah.
But man, that's a sobering thought to think about.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah, and I mean, I could add a little bit myself just from my England experience, you know, my London church plant, but I won't go into detail, but I totally get that. So Britt Merrick, for those who don't know, Britt was the founding pastor of Reality Church in Carpinteria, California, which then became a network of churches, names like Tim Chaddick. Tim was in Los Angeles, went to London, Dave Lomas, San Francisco. Britt then ended up stepping away from the church. He's no longer pastoring the church. He's running the greatest surfboard company in the world, yeah. Channel Islands, which is his family business. But I was with Tim the other day, and Britt's playing guitar in the worship band.
Yeah.
So that's really great, yeah.
So final question for you, Richard, is what are you excited about for the future of CGN?
I'm excited about its trajectory. I'm excited to see this first collection of people that belong to this network connect in ways that Brian and I have been able to connect. Not like Brian said, it's not going to be everybody, but that they'll build these relationships by which ministry happens together and that connect ministry to ministry and that will birth other ministries. I think that's one of the most exciting prospects of CGN. I think within the existing team of guys and the things that are in their minds formulating to the resources and the training, that's all coming from years of experience. Mm-hmm. And I love that. That's super exciting to me. And then the opportunity to just be available to care for these guys and to be able to just wrap your arms around them. A conversation at a meal, at a breakfast, at whatever, in a regional meeting could mean more than any guy could ever put a price tag on, just because, God, you're connected by way of this network. So that's exciting.
And Richard, just one last thing. You know, you've had those, that's been part of your experience. And even recently we were talking about it, just how, you know, you're at, you know, a gathering of some sort, and then you just sort of, you know, seemingly randomly end up maybe sitting next to someone, like you said, at breakfast. And then a conversation ensues where you realize in the course of the conversation, like, wow, this is the Lord. The Lord is either, you know, using you to really speak into this person's life, or maybe they're speaking into your life something. And that's the beauty of it, isn't it?
So, Brian, I mean, if somebody's listening to this and they say, I want that, how do I get plugged in? Like, how do I start to develop those kinds of relationships, specifically through CGN? What would you say?
Yeah, well, what we really want to see cultivate, not our cultivate church planting thing, but cultivating relationships with our local connectors. You know, we're trying to identify people in different communities around the country, even throughout the world, where you might make an initial point of contact to say, hey, this is where I'm at. Is there anybody in the area? And sometimes it would be just as simple as, you know, Kellen Criswell. Kellen and I got to know each other because Kellen sent me a random email and said, hey, you don't know me, but I'm a guy out in Utah and I'm going through this and I would love to talk to somebody. Is there any chance whatsoever that you would be available? And I just said, hey, send me your phone number. And yeah, so that's how we met. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's just doing that sometimes, you know, it's reaching out. And I think the Lord is in all those kinds of things too, you know. I mean, I'm sitting here looking at you across the table and I'm thinking, I met you when you were 18 years old.
Yeah.
And you were just a kid that ended up in Hungary just doing mission stuff. And, you know, here we are now, you know, what, 20 years later? Is that where we're at now? Yeah. So crazy.
Awesome.
Good crazy.
Richard, thanks so much. Thanks for listening to this episode of the CGN Mission and Methods Podcast. In our next episode, Pastor Brian and I will be speaking with Wayne Taylor. Wayne is the founding pastor of Calvary Fellowship in Seattle, Washington, and has been involved in planting over 50 churches in the Pacific Northwest, in Europe, and in Russia. In this episode, Wayne will share his heart for evangelism and how CGN is carrying on this important aspect of what the early Calvary Chapel movement was all about. We'd love to hear feedback from you on these episodes. You can email us at cgn@calvarychapel.com. And if you'd like to support this podcast, one of the best ways you can do that is by giving us a rating and review on your podcast app. Written reviews are particularly helpful in helping boost this content so other people can find it and benefit from it. Until next time, God bless you.